Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back in here on Cody and Gold. Sorry, my headphones stopped working there for a minute. I have the same problem as you.
Yes.
I'm assuming the music is playing. Cody Tapp, Steven Serta with you. James on the other side of the glass. He's going to handle things for Serta, who'll be filling in for us on Thursday as well, as we take on this Christmas week, Hanukkah week. I don't know, whatever you celebrate. Alex did inform me that Hanukkah is the same day as Christmas this year, so I'm all caught up on that.
I had no idea.
Same day, man.
Yeah.
Or Hanukkah starts, obviously Hanukkah is 8 nights instead of 1. It starts on Christmas Day. You never celebrated Hanukkah?
No, I've never had the chance to do that. I would like to celebrate Hanukkah. I like eating food and getting presents, doing whatever any holiday celebration entails.
Do you like getting presents more or giving them? Cuz I don't really care to, like, this sounds stupid, but I'm not kidding. I don't really care if I ever get a present.
Yeah.
That moves the needle far less for me.
Yeah. I think I'm the same way. I like giving them. I like putting thought into them and coming up with, like, thoughtful things. Like, although I'm pretty guilty of, like, family members, I'm just like, here's a gift card. But, like, the people that I really want to put the work in for, I will put the work in for. But I am always that guy. It's just like, just don't get me anything, or get me a gift card to the movies or something. You don't need to spend a lot of money on me. I'm fine.
Like, it'll get used. Over on the text line, somebody said D'Amico earlier gave an update on Tank Dell after suffering that really horrific injury at the end of the Chiefs game. Yeah, I think they were calling it an ACL and dislocated kneecap and... I mean, it's kind of everything, I'm sure. I felt really bad for Tank Dell. And I understand, because, like, at that moment, the Texans were still in that game. But what I would say about that, which over the last 2 weeks I think has stood out about the Chiefs, Serta, is that was the Texans fighting to stay in the game. Like, at no point did it feel like the Texans were taking control of the game or doing something abnormal in the game. What happened in that moment, that terrific pass by C.J. Stroud, which he can still make, even better catch by Tank Dell when you consider the injury stuff at that point. I'll just tell you that the way that this works is that they were doing that to stay in the game, to stay alive, to fight, to do whatever, to fight to stay in the game. And that's when I know a team has control. The Chiefs had complete control of the Texans the entire time.
Yeah.
They had complete control over the Browns the entire time. This is the first time all year where I would say start to finish, it was a non-stressful, mostly uneventful, or just straight up fun.
Yeah.
Chiefs game to watch. The 6 turnovers against the Browns and Jameis Winston. And then this game in which they completely controlled a division-winning football team who they might face in the postseason again. We don't know. I think at this moment I would probably still choose Ravens or I don't know about the Steelers. If the Ravens are in the 5, I think they'll beat the Texans. But if it's the other way around, I'm probably the Texans, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that the Saints game and the 49ers game were the only other two games this season where I think you could maybe argue that. But, like, Saints, one of the worst teams in football. Now they had that 2-0 start. And we were like, ooh, is New Orleans kind of spicy? And now we know they're one of the absolute worst teams in the league.
They're not spicy.
And then the 49ers, obviously not the same team they were last season. And when the Chiefs played them, they had a lot of injuries and were really banged up. So not really the same type of game. But the Browns, even though they don't have a lot of wins, they're still an interesting team with Jameis Winston, at least not with Dorian Thompson-Robinson.
And certainly not before with Deshaun Watson.
Yeah. And early in the game for the Texans, that, you know, that beautiful touchdown to Tank Dell, like, that was the version of the Texans that we were supposed to get this season, because the Texans, they're a playoff team, sure. But coming into this season, at least for me, I thought they were going to be a bona fide Super Bowl
contender. I thought they were going
team.
To compete for the number one seed. Weak division, quarterback coming off of rookie of the year. But their offensive line stinks, so their offense never got anything going. And defensively, they're a liability.
Yeah, and their offensive line is very bad. Like, very, very bad. Like worse than the Chiefs' levels of bad. But their rookie season, it was, run the football, play action, create explosive plays downfield with CJ Stroud. And then this season, Bobby Slowick hasn't really adjusted much, and he's just trying to do the exact same things, but you can't do that in the NFL. You have to constantly adjust. And so they've taken this step back, but for a moment in the first half, CJ Stroud and the Texans against this Chiefs team, like, it did look like we had a game, but I totally agree with you. The Chiefs were in control of this thing. The Chiefs were in charge of this thing from start to finish. And I never wavered and thought, oh, the Texans are going to come back and win this game like they have made me do over the last 6 weeks or so prior to the last couple of games. But for a moment, we got the Texans that I thought we were going to get initially when we saw the schedule and saw this late season game against that team.
I know this is going to sound, and I'm sure that somebody said it sounded this way earlier in the show. I think with the progression of Xavier Worthy, who I think is the Chiefs' number one target, unless Hollywood Brown is going to take it away from them at this point because of what he's been over the last 5 weeks. He's also had 11 targets each of the last two games. So he has continued to grow since the Buffalo game. Since that time, he is on pace for essentially 950 yards and 8 touchdowns over the course of a season. This is one of the benefits of injury. Last year, because they had no wide receivers and they had to get Rashee Rice going, he got the benefit of fast-tracked development. And Xavier Worthy got the benefit of fast-track development in a year where I don't think their plan was to ever have Xavier Worthy turn into this by the time the season was done. They might very well have ended up drafting their version of, maybe it's a 90% or 95% of A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith. I think that Rashee Rice was going to be a 1,200-yard receiver before he got hurt.
Yeah.
I think that Devonta Smith is a 900 to 1,000-yard wide receiver with game-breaking speed, which is clearly what Xavier Worthy is. They have now two very qualified wide receivers going into next year for multiple years of crazy cheap control. But I think that Xavier Worthy has developed in a massive way to the point that's really not being discussed even highly enough probably for their opponents, because you have to take him serious as the Chiefs' number one wide receiver threat.
Yeah, he's been that, and I've been talking about that a lot on the pod. Because I felt like it was flying under the radar because of the narrative of like, oh, the Chiefs winning ugly. They can't connect deep. They all these one possession games. And I was like, quietly, Xavier Worthy has had a really expanded role over the last month or so.
Over the last two games, it's been even more than that.
And he's getting tons of targets, but they're not just deep shots. They're manufactured targets that are trying to utilize his speed and get him into space, which is how I've been begging Andy Reid to use him all season. But I think, and I totally agree with you on Rashee Rice, like, I think prior to injury, Rashee Rice had a strong chance of leading the NFL in receptions this season, the way things were going. He would have been in that running, and I think he would have been a 1,200 to 1,400 yard wide receiver. But now with the development of Xavier Worthy, similar to what they did with Rashee Rice last season, last year it was late in the year, fine, we're going to commit to Rashee Rice and what he does well. He may be a one-trick pony, but it seems like defenses can't stop that guy when you hit him on a slant or you hit him in the intermediate part of the field on a crosser.
It's too fast.
And he goes and breaks tackles and sheds guys and creates down the field. And now Xavier Worthy, he can create the separation. I think we're going to hit connect on a deep shot, maybe in the playoffs.
I think sometime in the next. So the problem is that they might not play against Denver.
Yeah.
If they win this game on Wednesday. But I think sometime in the next three games, I'll give them the first round of their opening playoff round.
Yeah. And sometimes that's all it takes is for Andy Reid to commit to, like, okay, we can't just keep running this guy deep down the field and hoping that we create those. I really wish they'd stop doing that with Justin Watson too. Like, get Hollywood Brown in that role now and do it with Xavier Worthy. But like the manufactured touches are massive. Like, when you talk about the best playmakers in the NFL, like, what do you talk about? You talk about those guys command touches. Those offenses scheme things up and find ways to get them the football. And the way the Chiefs are doing that with Xavier Worthy now, and on top of, you know, Hopkins being reliable, Kelsey being reliable when they need him, and Hollywood Brown back in the mix, like, Worthy is going to have a huge role in the postseason and the way that they have deployed him over the last few games.
And if Travis Kelce gets to rest and turns into playoff Travis again, exactly like he did last year, well, then they do have the best offense in the AFC. Like, this is not a hard transition for me. Xavier Worthy stays playing at this level, but they just get him more and more involved, which they've done. He was pretty much at, like, 4 to 5 catches, 6 to 7 targets, 4 weeks in a row. Over the last 2 weeks, it's 6 to 7 catches, 9, 10, 11 targets per game, and he's taken a nice glide forward in the development process. If all it takes is Travis Kelce to get a breather, and then he just gets to be the same thing, then, you know, you're having a different conversation. You're immediately kind of right back in there, and then they're the best offense in the AFC all of a sudden. And I know that their other offenses are really good, and Lamar Jackson is probably the answer for this because of how well they've done offensively all season, or the Bills or whatever. But, I mean, the Chiefs can compete with those teams offensively if Xavier Worthy is going to also do this. Travis Kelce's rested, and now Hollywood Brown's in the offense for the first time all season and had 5 catches for 45 yards, including a couple of third down catches. And what I think is, for the team that has already been, this is the one thing on offense that they have been all year. Team has already been the number one team on third down. They've been the best third down team all year. Tell me how you guard them on third down. Let's just say it's 3rd and 5. What is your answer? We're going to bracket Travis Kelce. That used to be the answer. Good. I mean, okay, I guess.
Yeah.
So you're just going to leave everyone else one-on-one? Let's just say you're going to double Travis and you're going to double Xavier Worthy because now he's the number one.
Yeah.
And what? Just leave DeAndre Hopkins alone against your second corner for 5 yards, or Hollywood Brown alone on your third corner for 5 yards? I don't know that there's a good way to defend this team on third down anymore if this is who they are.
And they were already successful on third down this season prior to having this plethora of weapons. Like, you're so right, because it's, yeah, what do you do? Well, we saw last week against the Texans. Okay, Hollywood Brown, first game back, has a very limited role, only plays a handful of snaps. Where do they go on fourth down? Wide open Hollywood Brown for a big play. Hollywood Brown also had another third down conversion that was big. Hopkins had a big third down conversion for the Chiefs. Like, they have guys, and I think we talk about the Chiefs' experience, and that's why it's so meaningful that they have these veteran guys coming back and getting into the mix this late in the season. Because you know Travis Kelce is going to have a Hall of Fame caliber postseason catch somewhere down the line. He does it every year. We know that he's going to do that. DeAndre Hopkins has never played meaningful football in the way that he is going to play meaningful football this year for the Chiefs. So I'm willing to bank that he is going to have a key moment in this postseason for the Chiefs.
There's one reason why I'm worried DeAndre Hopkins will not have a big postseason moment, and it's not been addressed on any show that I've seen so far. Did you see how comically big his coat was on Sunday? Guys, it was 35 degrees. It was not that cold at Arrowhead on Sunday. By Arrowhead December standards, it was not that cold. And the size of coat that DeAndre Hopkins needed in a post-game press conference felt a bit much. It was like Sherpa lined and like wind resistant. That looked like a man who had spent his time playing in Arizona and Houston and wanted nothing to do with the cold.
Okay, but he's already played games in the cold here in Kansas City. I don't fault him after the game wanting to be bundled up. I thought it was going to be like that Tom Brady giant sideline coat or something. That's not that bad.
That was a pretty big coat, man.
I'm not going to doubt future Hall of Famer DeAndre Hopkins because of that coat. It was chilly. It wasn't crazy cold, I don't think, on Saturday, but it was chilly enough.
I just think, like, I'm a little worried what we're going to see is a progressively larger coat as the postseason goes on. We're working our way to that Tom Brady sideline coat at some point.
Yeah.
Where he's like, you know, like in a coat 5 sizes too big.
Hey, and that's fine. Bundle up, DeAndre. Keep those hands warm for your key postseason moment. As long as you make the catch and don't drop an easy one, I don't care how you bundle up on the sideline.
So you're not buying into my he won't play in the... Because there were, like, think about the Miami Dolphins last year. They didn't want to play in the cold. The second they stepped out on the field, they were like, ooh, this sucks.
Yeah, but that's the Dolphins. We knew the Dolphins were soft. DeAndre Hopkins is a Hall of Famer. He's going to fight through the cold.
Okay, that's fair. He is a Hall of Famer, and I'm sure he's played in several cold weather games in his career, but not cold weather in a postseason run. This has got to be so exciting for him, by the way.
Yeah.
He has been toiling in mediocre football teams his entire career, even though he has been great his entire career. And now he gets to be with the best quarterback in the league, on the team with the best record in the league, fighting for a Super Bowl for the first time in his career. I mean, if I were him, I'd be pretty motivated by it. Or if you're one of these players who are motivated by, you know, getting there. Someone just said they don't care if it's a Russian doll size of five different coats.
Yeah.
Stay warm on those sidelines from the 651. Super Bowls are indoors. Just get him that Super Bowl game. It'll be all ready to go.
It'll be fine. He's going to come up with a huge play.
Derek Carr didn't play well in the cold either. Some players don't play well in the cold. They're usually mediocre players.
But. And Brock Purdy can't play in the rain because he's got small hands. Like DeAndre Hopkins at least has the physical capabilities to fight through the cold to make something happen.
I don't think he likes it, though.
I don't
think anyone's asked him, but I don't think he likes the cold.
I don't like the cold either. Some players like it, some players don't. But DeAndre Hopkins is going to have a crucial moment for the Chiefs of the postseason. I guarantee it.
It's like the only reason I don't want a dome when and if the Chiefs build a new... They're going to build a new stadium at some point, but when they build a new stadium, I'm like, I kind of don't want a dome. Like, I do think that there's an advantage between forcing these teams, not the Bills and Josh Allen because they're used to it, but... Every other team in the league, forcing them to come to your building, play outside, and do this. So unless you play in the AFC North, in which every team plays in the blistering cold, apparently throughout the year, all these teams are going to get kind of soft. Like, if anything, it'll help the Chicago Bears because of all these years of having to play in disgusting 50-mile-per-hour winds. But kind of like the teams have to play outside at Arrowhead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in favor of it. I'm not one of those people that's like, make every stadium a dome so nobody has to worry about weather conditions. Like, we don't get those magical moments like Jameis Winston beating the Pittsburgh Steelers on Thursday Night Football in a blizzard. Like, those are the things we remember. That was a meaningless football game in like week 14 of an NFL regular season. And I still remember the pictures from that game because it was just so much fun watching Jameis do that in the snow. Like, I do think fighting through the adversity of weather conditions matters. And I do think that's why you can make the case a player like Jared Goff, who the Lions somehow managed to have like 90% of their games were indoors this season. But Jared Goff traditionally struggles in bad weather games and in cold weather games. Like, I think it absolutely affects some players, and so it is an advantage in a small way to the Chiefs.
From the 816, when they build a new stadium, is that happening? Did I miss something? Okay, so here's what
it's going to happen.
Yeah. Has any news changed? No. Let me just tell you how this worked. Clark Hunt is very sentimental to Arrowhead Stadium, and I do think part of him wanted to preserve it. If people would have just paid to preserve it for the payment of preserving it. But that vote went horribly. And their renovation plans weren't good. Like, they weren't good or well-received. I don't think he's going to preserve Arrowhead just for the sake of it. The biggest loss thing in all the stadium stuff, and I'm sure you covered it too, Sert, over at Fool's Club Media, the same as we did here, is that the Royals and the Chiefs were asking for the same amount of money. And the Royals were like, look at this cool downtown stadium with all of its bells and whistles. And the Chiefs are like, what if we had a bigger sidewalk? And I'm like, that's it? You want the same money? So you can put a canopy on the upper floors and there's a couple of end zone suites? Pass.
Yeah.
Not interested in your bad plan to save this infrastructure. They wanted to save it only if you were willing to pay to preserve it. They don't want to save it that bad. I think that in the end, they'll just go to a new stadium at this point.
Yeah, I do believe that Clark Hunt is very sentimental about Arrowhead Stadium too. And in a perfect world would get whatever he wants from Kansas City, Missouri to renovate and revamp and do that. But also, you can also read a little bit into the Chiefs proposal.
He only wanted the 20-year thing. They weren't trying to save it forever.
Yeah, like with the assets that the Chiefs have, with the success that they've had in recent years with Patrick Mahomes, how much season tickets cost. You're telling me that was their plan for a renovated stadium? Like, some of that reads as like, that's intentional. Like, we didn't want that plan to go through because we know there could be better options on the table that we would like to explore.
Yes. It was. Yeah. I don't know if it was like an intentional tank job. Like, they did it just to blow the vote. I just don't think that they were like, if it doesn't go our way.
Yeah,
we're fine. I couldn't. So after all this, and I blame the Chiefs early on. The Royals should be so mad at the Chiefs for how that vote went down. They completely stayed out of the fight for like 6 months. Said nothing. Let the Royals do all the heavy lifting. Take all the arrows. Take all the fire from all the fandom. Took all the heat for the sales. All of it. Took all the heat. And then when they chimed in, it was with a terrible plan. They're like, hey, guys, we're finally coming to the table.
It was 2 weeks.
How do you feel about a walkway and an AstroTurf football field where Kaufman used to be. You're like, what?
Yeah.
My God, no, that's not what any of us wanted. No one was asking for the 70-yard turf football field so you can have like a 500-person concert with Tech N9ne. Which, like, I appreciate the effort, I guess, but you could have come stronger to the table with this. And some of it is just knowing the way the business works.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to get harder and harder to get a stadium built if you're an NFL team.
They rolled that out like 2 weeks before the vote, too. Mm-hmm. Like, they sat mm-hmm. out a lot of it, and they let the Royals do the legwork. And the Royals, like, to their credit, the Royals are asking for a lot. The Chiefs, I think, didn't want to be the organization that was like, give us a brand new stadium. And so they came out with, we're happy to renovate Arrowhead, but now there's options on the table that could be a brand new stadium. And so they're like, well, why wouldn't we listen to that? Why wouldn't we explore those options?
We'll talk more about the upcoming game against the Chiefs and a couple of other things I want to get to with Steven Serta, who's with us for the final 30 minutes of the show. Just real quick, we had mentioned Hollywood Brown and Xavier Worthy and some of these players who stand out. My current stance, and I would like to know if anyone disagrees, 913-586-7965. My current stance is Jaden Hicks is their best safety, and they should play him more and more and more. I, at the very least, has a nose for the football. He yes. has three interceptions this season, which leads all defensive backs on the entire team, with like 25% of the snaps. I know that this is unpopular if I were to say this to the Chiefs coaching staff, and they would be like, that's a crazy trade-off, and I think they're wrong. If you have a nose for the football, I don't care if you screw up other ways, I want you on the field. If you force turnovers, I want you on the field over the guy whose hips turn the right way out of the break and doesn't blow it against a tight end every once in a while. Jaden Hicks, who I said 2 weeks ago should have been playing more, has been playing more, should play even more than that. He is their best safety.
Yeah. I agree. I think he's certainly their rangiest safety, because that's kind of the problem with the Spags drafted safety types, is like they all kind of do the same thing. They're all really, really good line of scrimmage tacklers. And we know Steve Spagnuolo wants everybody in a secondary to be a great tackler. And that's something the Chiefs have excelled at over the last several years. But none of them are particularly great in coverage. Jaden Hicks, in his recent expanded role, has shown some ability in coverage that Brian Cook simply doesn't have, that Justin Reed simply doesn't have. Chamari Connor, playing out of position, probably is a slot cornerback more so than a typical safety, simply does not have the coverage skills. Chamari Connor showed a little bit of ability to find turnovers and stuff, but in coverage, he's a flat-out liability. Jaden Hicks should have been more involved earlier, I think, and all the returns. And every time we saw him in the preseason, too, it was like, oh, Jaden Hicks is out there making plays. Like, every time he gets an opportunity, he goes out there and makes something happen. And so I do think we're going to see a lot more of him moving forward. And I'm really excited because it feels like the Chiefs actually have like a rangy safety, which they haven't had in a while.
No, Justin Reed was the exact same type as Tyrann Mathieu. I would argue because they got paid identical contracts, you probably should have stuck with Tyrann Mathieu. I think Tyrann Mathieu's played just as good, if not a hair better, than Justin Reed. Not way worse, but like you wouldn't have had to have the learning curve and like the figuring out the new system part. You could have just like rolled him in. I'm not arguing against Justin Reed's been a good player for them. They've had the best defense in the NFL last year and a top five defense this year with him. So he is not a hindrance to what they do. But it's just like it's the constant insistence to choose technique over skill, over like physical ability.
Yeah.
And when it comes to a position where like you spent 14 weeks having 10 turnovers, which was bottom three in the NFL, and it just so happens the second he starts playing, interceptions occur. I kind of want the risk-taking guys every once in a while.
Yeah.
Especially if you've got the pass rush to match it. And maybe that's what it took. It took Charles Omenihu and Chris Jones playing together and Karloftis all playing together so that the pass rush could force you into aggressive plays in the secondary versus just keeping your head above water, which they did for a little while in the secondary, and that's okay. But that might have been what changed it. We'll talk more about that in just a minute. Plus, where the offensive line was, what we think about Joe Tooney. Should that stick around the rest of the year? We'll get to that next here on Cody and Gold. Wrapping up here on Cody and Gold. 96.5 The Fan. Cody Tapp, Steven Serta with you. James on the other side of the glass. Handling things well today. First time I've worked with James. First time you've worked with James, and you're filling out on our show on Thursday, so you'll get to see him again then.
Yeah, gonna have to hit up James on Christmas Day. Sorry, Dad. Just gonna let you know what's going on the 26th.
prepare you accordingly, you know, for the show. He's going to have to probably let you in the building. I mean,
yes. Yeah, we got to figure that out too.
They took your key card away when you quit the first time?
Yeah, and I actually, I kept it, I think, at one point just to see how long it would work after I left. And then one day I did try to come up here because I left something behind and I wanted to see if it was still here, but it didn't work. And so I'm sure it's gone now. I've been back in the building and kind of looked around for it, and I feel like it got swiped.
You didn't find it in there?
No.
I did look for like a couple of things because it's always like, you know, you're back in and I'm like, hey, you know what? Let's do some of the stuff we used to do, or let's have a little fun. I was like, you know, we could do Serta's Pop Culture Corner. Intro doesn't exist. I was like, I could play some of the jingles from when I made When You Quit.
Yeah.
And I couldn't. And they're all listed as jingle. Can you tell me the day you quit? Because that would actually really help me maybe guess. Maybe I still have one of those still in the system.
I know my first day at SB Nation was June 1st, 2020. So
that system doesn't go that far back.
Yeah, it would have been probably, I think I was here like the Friday before that was like my last day. And then I started SB Nation like on that Monday.
Okay. For those who are new to this show, we got a lot of new listeners on 96.5 The Fan, the FM side. It's been quite beneficial, turns out.
Nice.
Matter of fact, I'm going to make a promise before the holiday season now. I'm not even going to ask Alex's permission because this only involves me. It doesn't matter. This feels like it should be a show-related announcement. Doesn't matter. Turns out the ratings have been pretty good for this show.
Nice.
So good, in fact, that I might be in line for some financial compensation as it relates to the ratings of this show.
Hey.
And here is what I promise. That if you keep listening to this show for the remainder of the year, and we got one Chiefs game on noon, so just like turn it on or whatever, and the ratings continue to be financially beneficial to me, if I get one of those bonuses, I'll spend it on you. I will create a tab at Kelly's for like $500 and we can all go drink on it. Does that seem fair?
Really? Really?
I will take the money that is given to me as part of this bonus. I will immediately put it on a tab at Kelly's and we'll find a day where we can all go drink together.
I'm assuming gold also would be eligible for a bonus.
He would.
Of some kind.
I can't speak to if he would put his money towards it. I will account for my 500.
Well, so now if they pull it off, then you can lean into it with gold and be like, well, you know, it's the holiday season and we're giving back to our audience and our listeners. Yeah. And you know, it might be cool if you just, you don't have to do 500, but you know, maybe a couple $100 just maybe on top of it. Sweeten
maybe
it up.
200.
Give them incentive to push us over the top at the end of the year.
I can't speak for his, but I feel like this is one of those, I wouldn't have gotten this money if people didn't listen to this show. So I will just give the money back to the people who have technically earned me this cash. It's that, or we could do something ludicrous. These are our choices. We can have a tab and we can all hang out and have fun, or we can choose something ludicrous to put it on and see how crazy we can get. We can put on a $500 parlay and just see if we can make the party even more fun. I'm open to some options here. The point is that the money is yours, the listeners, for us to have fun with.
So that's interesting, though, the parlay idea. Like, can they vote instead of just getting drinks and hanging out, which is something
cool.
To your credit. I feel like Cody and Gold are very good about giving back to the audience and finding ways to hang out and mix it up. But could you imagine just inviting your audience members and friends to Kelly's and you got $500 on a Chiefs parlay or something?
But you
got to
pay for your own drinks, but we're... same game parlay for the Chiefs that we're all watching together?
On a postseason parlay that's going to pay out like $8,000 or something.
And then we promise with the $8,000 to do something even more ludicrous show related. Not a parlay, but like an even bigger party of even more ludicrous nature.
Then you can put on your version of the Cody and Gold Eras Tour party.
Oh my God. Cody and Gold Eras. That would actually be a great theme. So you're an era?
Yeah.
Cody and Gold new era. Then there's the COVID era. Yeah. We definitely had the COVID era. Some Super Bowl era Cody and Gold shows. I mean, God, man, the you know what? If we did that, I'd be even willing with that $8,000 to put on an entire production that is a musical based on Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift's falling in love together, in which I play Travis Kelce. I will create custom-made songs for it with that $8,000. custom made costumes in which we create an entire, you know, one night only Broadway style performance. The point is that part of this money is yours, but you got to promise to keep listening. Cause the way that this works is it's a quarter and the quarter ain't over yet. So we still got a whole nother week. So when Serta's talking on Thursday, I need you to still listen to this show.
Yes. And please do it because, you know, I want to engage with you guys and hopefully do a good job filling in. So they asked me back because I enjoy doing this occasionally.
Somebody said you need to parlay the yes out of that much.
that seems like obviously the much more reckless option.
Oh, but yeah. The infinitely more reckless.
But the payoff would be incredible.
Like, I mean, even if it's just a 10-to-1 parlay, you're talking about four, you know, you're talking about a lot of money.
Yeah.
Thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah, that could seriously up the production budget of anything you want to do in the new year.
$5,000? I mean, we could still do that same Kelly's party, you know? We still have the $500 tab and then still have $4,500 to mess around with.
Yeah, that should be it then. It's, you can come hang out with us at Kelly's, but this tab's not free. But if we hit this parlay,
the tab's free.
We'll really put on a party after that.
Then this party will really kick ass. Yeah, I'm willing to do that for you. But again, it's kind of on you, if we're being honest. Someone says, 816, opera singer here. Count me in for the show. Great. Opera singer, I'll just be honest with you. You are immediately cast as handmaid. His song doesn't have anything to do with their love, but instead his love of cheeseburgers. But don't worry, you'll love it. The lines will be well-written and crafted, and we'll cover it on that end. That's it. I was going to try to pull... For those who are new to the show, I was occasionally doing a random jingle for this show, but I made a bunch for Serta as he was leaving. But I mean, all these just say like jingle one. I don't even know what they're for. Jingle one, two, three, four, 14.
What year are they?
2021. All right, I'm just going to play one. This one says.
So it was 2021 when I left, not 2020, I think, right?
It was post COVID?
Yes. Okay, so it was June 1st, 2021. Because, yeah, I didn't quite hit 3 years at SB Nation, so it would have been June of this year been my 3 year.
So it feels possible. I mean, I can't say for sure. It seems possible that this is a jingle about you. Let's give a random jingle a listen. Serta, why, Julie? What they do to you? If I stop singing, will that do? Pretty good.
That wasn't bad.
All right,
right out of the gate.
If that one is a jingle for you, then this one must be too. Serta, don't leave. I'll be really sad. What the hell? I thought that we were friends. That was the best one. Again, if you're a new listener to the show, you might not realize that Serta was the first producer of Cody and Gold.
It's
and then eventually left.
I did kind of forget about the jingles, and I enjoy even more that they're all just like 12 seconds long. that you made several of them, and they were all very short and to the point about me leaving the show at the time.
I mean, they were just, I didn't want you to leave. And then we got a good producer in Nick, and he left. I didn't even create him a jingle. I think I made him a song. You know, I think that was one of my favorite moments on this show because you did not know that I had made those and they're very aggressive. And so like, you're just immediately put in a position to have to live react to those.
And I think that was on my last day. So like the decision was already made. There was no walking back at that point.
Yeah. That was on your very last day. Alex, like he had already had like pre-scheduled out of town vacation. So it was me, you, and a friend of mine, Pete, you probably don't know him. And so he was also on the show and we finished out in style, you know, sometimes this stuff happens. We'll finish talking Chiefs here for the last couple of minutes of the show since we've got a big game coming up on Christmas Day. I still think it's reasonable to complain about the schedule for the Chiefs. They don't have to. They can just play their games and win them, which they've done two of the first three they had to play in a 10-11 game stretch. I felt better about the offensive line. I say that with caution because I don't want it to make it seem like I'm overly confident in them. But the second game with Joe Tooney was better than the first. When Jawan Taylor went out, they didn't completely implode with Wanye Morris for the remainder of the game. I am cautiously optimistic that if DJ Humphreys never comes back for this team, and he did not practice again today, Chris Jones, DJ Humphreys, and Shikamari Connor all didn't practice, that they could maybe hold up with Joe Tooney. Be better than they were under Wanye or Kingsley. It's still not my preferred plan. My preferred plan is DJ Humphreys starts week 18 of the season as a starting left tackle, but they at least show that they maybe aren't a sinking ship with Joe Tooney at left tackle.
Yeah, I think this week is going to be really interesting to see how it plays out, because I don't think DJ Humphreys is going to be available this week. So yeah, you are talking week 18, and then it's like, if he can't play week 18, or then we're talking about changing up the offensive line chemistry in the playoffs. Like, I don't think you want to do that, especially if you end the season strong that way. And Juwan Taylor is now limited too. He's a little bit banged up after the last game. Wanye Morris kind of looked good at right tackle when he had to step in.
He looked
against
better
a
right
good
than he did against
rush.
Left.
Yeah, but much more natural position for him as a player. So I just don't think, if it keeps going this way, and I assume this is the offensive line that you're going to have to trot out this week against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and if they look good against a good Steelers pass rush, I just feel like this is kind of what you have to lean into moving forward, because DJ Humphreys only had the half game sample size prior to getting injured, but offensive line chemistry absolutely matters. Trust in those guys matters. And him
at some
having,
point it might be too late for Humphreys.
Yeah. Like him, him having no playing time. And then, you know, he was supposed to have the ramp up period. Wanye Morris is such a disaster against the Raiders that they expedited all of that and forced him onto the field before he was really ready, causes a hamstring injury, which hamstring injuries have a tendency to linger and be re-aggravated in the
especially
NFL.
Especially in an offensive line position where you're using.
Yeah. Like, lot. It just feels like you're not going to get enough return on the investment. Like, that contract that you signed him kind of thinking he would be your savior at left tackle down the stretch just kind of feels like that's a negative for you moving forward. And this can work. And this is kind of what you have to move forward with, because the sample size so far is two of the best offensive performances that you've put together as a team all season long.
This is the best the team's looked. If I were the rest of the AFC, I'd be so mad, because what happened was maybe you were never going to, they were always going to catch their stride and be a problem in the postseason, but at least you could have kept them out of the one seed when the Chiefs were playing bad football and you had them not down and out, but you had them kind of down a little bit where a field goal made by Denver causes them a game when they'd have to win out, right? Imagine if they just lost one of those games. They won them all. They deserve credit for winning them. But if they had just stumbled in one of the many games in which they could have lost because the games were close late, the Chiefs would have to win out to get the one seed. If they had lost two, they wouldn't even be in the one seed. When they were still figuring it all out, you could have stopped them from being the number one seed. And now what's happening is they're playing their best football, and they're only going to need to win twice in order to get to the postseason or to get to the Super Bowl. That's it. And yeah, both those games are going to be at home, and they're playing better football. Ah, you've made a horrible mistake. Massive misstep by the entire AFC for the better part of 2 months when they could have taken advantage of it. The only team who even tried to do the job was Buffalo.
Yeah.
Everyone else came up short.
And I think more importantly, too, and something we probably haven't talked about enough with Joe Tooney at left tackle, Mahomes looks more comfortable. Like, Mahomes looks like he trusts the offensive line as much as he's trusted it all season long. Because
well, they were turnstile before, man.
Yeah, and Joe Tooney is just that exceptional of an athlete. Like, credit to him. All-pro, Hall of Fame caliber guard. Also, could just step out at left tackle and go up against one of the best pass rushes in the NFL in Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson. And then also Myles Garrett, who's playing at a defensive player of the year level this season. Like, Joe Tooney is an incredible player, and I think more importantly than just the offensive line chemistry and the overall play is the trust that Mahomes has in him, because we've just seen how fast this offense can crater when Mahomes doesn't trust the blocking, when he's questioning what he's seeing downfield because he's questioning whether or not he's going to get drilled from his blind side. And I think that matters even more than the overall play of the offense.
That's been going on for a while. It's been very undersold. Mahomes threw 9 interceptions in his first 7 games. He's thrown 2 in his last 8. And both of those were in the same game, by the way. The Buffalo game, one of those was an absolute garbage time touchdown. They were down 9 points in the fourth quarter on a fourth down, and he heaved one. So realistically, he's thrown one legitimate interception in his last 8 games, Serta. Like, he, and for a while, it was at the detriment of sacks. Like, he was just choosing to get sacked instead of choosing to take an interception, which was smart, by the way. That's the proper way to do it.
Yeah.
But it's his risk mitigation is part of the reason they win every game. Like, they took away the risk out of the offense. They don't really fumble the ball all that often. They're pretty protecting there. And now Mahomes isn't going to give it away in, you know, he's not going to give it away in the interception game. Well, then how the hell are you going to beat him? And the answer is you aren't, right? Because if he's the only game in which he turned, they've won every game. They haven't turned it over in those 8 games. The only game they lost is when he threw 2. And that Bills one was quick, right? Wasn't that like the first drive?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was immediately. And then the Bills were up 7-0.
It was frustrating. It was the second
or third play.
It was absolutely a forced throw by Patrick Mahomes, but I don't want to make it seem like Joe Tooney has all of a sudden fixed all of the Chiefs offensive line problems. Like, it's not like the Texans didn't get pressure on Mahomes and give him some problems in that game. But what has also helped it is Andy Reid leaning into the quick precision passing game, which isn't nearly as exciting, but Mahomes excels at it and the offense works and the offense is functional. So you just can't have him dropping back, going 4, 5, 6 seconds, trying to buy time and wait for things to develop downfield or run around in the pocket anymore. Like, the offense just doesn't work that way. You got to get rid of the ball fast. You got to lean into the precision quick stuff, which the Chiefs have the personnel to excel at. Like, just lean into that and it'll be better. It'll functionally just be better moving forward.
Well, especially with the moving pieces now, this all goes back to the wide receiver stuff we were saying earlier, which is, when you have this many options, quick passing game, they're hard to cover.
Yeah.
Xavier Worthy, DeAndre Hopkins, Hollywood Brown, Travis Kelce, and Noah Gray on the field at the same time. That's hard to cover. That's a difficult thing to do defensively, and you're going to run into these problems on there. Since we don't have any other, I don't have any issues this week, let's do a little game predictions brought to you by Volkswagen Lee Summit. Winter clearance time over Volkswagen Lee Summit. You can get up to $8,000 off Atlas or Atlas Cross Sports, are up to $5,000 off Tiguans like mine or Jettas or Tauses or some of the other models they have available at Volkswagen Lee Summit. You got an official score prediction yet? Have you thought about it? Mine, earlier we shot the video for social media that'll go out on game day. I said 15-12 all field goals. Just feels right for Christmas Day. You used to be frustrated as hell. 5 field goals for the Chiefs, 4 for the Steelers, and they win 15-12 to get the number one seed.
I do think the Steelers had a game earlier this season where Chris Boswell hit like 6 field goals and they put up 18 points.
And didn't score a touchdown. Of all teams, they beat the Ravens.
Yes.
18-16 in that game.
And then, of course, the no touchdown playoff game against the Chiefs where I think...
Justin Houston was in coverage on Antonio Brown 60 yards down the field. Yeah, I remember.
I think they're going to score touchdowns. I'm not willing to go the field goal route on this one, but I think it's going to be, I think the Chiefs are going to look good again and I have confidence. So I think it's going to be 24-13 Chiefs.
James, you got a prediction?
27-14 Kansas City.
27-14. So we all like the Chiefs to win on Christmas Day. Sir, I really appreciate you coming in for the last couple of hours.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Thanks for having me. It's always a blast stepping in.
If you enjoyed having Serta back, he will be filling in for our show on Thursday, the day after Christmas. The Drive's coming up next.